Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. As you know, Nick and I just returned from Rome, where we were attending the Under Caesar Sword Conference, and the conference was exceptional. Again, the focus was to present findings concerning global persecution of Christians, secondly, how to develop response and solidarity, and then thirdly, to look at the 50th anniversary of the Declaration on Religious Freedom from the Second Vatican Council, Dignitatis Humanae, and ask what does that mean for the future of universal religious liberty. With me right now is one of the men who organized the conference and hosted it, Dr. Dan Philpott. Dan is professor of political science at Notre Dame, where he directs the Center for Civil and Human Rights. He's also an associate scholar with the Berkeley Center's Religious Freedom Project. He's an author, editor of several books, including Just and Unjust Peace, An Ethic of Political Reconciliation, as well as God's Century, Resurgent Religion and Global Politics. And Dan, it's good to have you with me. Thanks.
Hi, good afternoon, Al, and welcome back from Rome.
Yes, and to you as well. We talked to each other there, but we didn't have a chance to interview to do a wrap-up to the conference. But let's give me your impression, first of all. As you know, I was very enthusiastic about it. How did you feel about the conference?
Well, I was delighted with how it went. One of the things that inspired me was that we were not only able to present the results of our scholars' findings on how Christian communities respond to persecution, but we also heard a lot of tear-jerking, heart-rending stories from flesh and blood examples of people who, embody what we're trying to study.
Yeah, it was at times very, very moving. And what will follow out of this conference? What are your plans now?
Well, this is the first, maybe the most major and high profile, but the first in a whole series of things which are going to communicate the findings. We've got, for instance, a documentary film coming. We had the producer over there in Rome also doing interviews. We're going to have a volume of scholarly essays. Then we're going to have a public report which transmits the findings to a wide audience. We'll have a launch for that report in Washington, D.C. this fall. We'll also be having a curricula for schools and churches to try to, get the church thinking about it together.
Very good. Now, any plans for a website?
We do have a website already going, and we'll continue to develop that and get our scholars' findings, up and communicated through that. It's ucs.nd.edu.
ucs.nd.edu, okay.
Yeah, UCS for Under Caesar Sword, .nd for Notre Dame, and then .edu.
Yeah. The consensus was that global persecution of Christians remains a serious problem. Is it growing? Is it expected to grow? Is it primarily restricted to Muslim-dominated regions?
Well, one of the fascinating things that came through the conference is the diversity of regimes in which the persecution happened. So Islam is a big part of it, but there's also regnant communist regimes. There's even places like Hindu India and Buddhist Sri Lanka, which are kind of surprisingly places where persecution is pretty harsh.
Yeah. Yeah, normally we don't associate religious persecution with Hindu-oriented societies or Buddhist societies, but
that's
I guess
true.
There's a new nationalism in India now, which doesn't see Christians as authentically Hindu, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. It envisions India as a homeland for Hindus, and then kind of wants to make Christians and Muslims second-class citizens.
Yeah, yeah. Do you find something paradoxical about the rise of politically and culturally relevant religion and moving beyond secularization, but also at the same time an increase in persecution of Christians?
Yes. Well, a trend over the last half century or so is the rise of religion and its political influence. So, for many centuries in the West and then in other parts of the world under Western influence, the world was becoming more secular in terms of religion's influence, becoming more and more privatized. And, you know, secular ideologies and regimes and ways of life were on the march. But we've seen a revival of religious influence in virtually every religion in every part of the world. And it has it's multivalent. That can result in great democratic, nonviolent protests and people power movements, but it can also result in violence and civil war. Well, the persecution of Christians is part and parcel of the violence.
Mm. One of the other aspects of the conference was the celebration of the Dignitatis Humanae, which we just celebrated the 50th anniversary of. This is the Second Vatican Council's Declaration on Religious Freedom. What kind of application might that Catholic thinking have on encouraging universal religious liberty?
Right. Well, Dignitatis Humanae was a landmark document in which the Church resoundingly affirmed religious freedom as a human right for every person. And but I think part of the beauty of it was part of the Council was part of a movement of the Church to kind of, in some way, you know, remaining faithful to all of its core convictions, but also represent a kind of widening of its concern to all of humanity, or at least an accenting. I don't want to overemphasize the black and white, but
right.
It's kind of a in a sense, some widening. The notion of human dignity and human rights took on a lot more scale and purchase. And I think that's very important, because the notion of human dignity is something that can resonate with people everywhere. And the notion of the human dignity with respect to the human person being one who finds his destiny and his fulfillment in religious truth. And I think that's something that can resonate with people across many cultures and religions, and is kind of a talking point or a basis in which we can, you know, and then now in this era where Christians are so much the subject of and victim of persecution, we've got something that can be appealed to across boundaries.
Yes. My guest, by the way, is Dr. Daniel Philpott. He is one of the organizer and hosts of the Under Caesar's Sword Conference that Nick and I just returned from. It was held December 10th through 12th at the Pontifical Urban University in Rome, and we've been listening to many of the interviews that were conducted over there, and we've done that over the last week. We're looking right now at Dignitatis Humanae. This is the Declaration on Religious Freedom that was considered by some one of the more controversial documents of the Second Vatican Council. Why was it considered controversial by some, Dan?
Well, there was a lot of debate about Dignitatis Humanae and whether it could be reconciled with previous church teachings, but also whether it was kind of giving into a sort of relativism.
Mm-hmm.
And there was good grounds for thinking that. In the 19th century, religious freedom was really advocated by the legatees of the French Revolution,
mm-hmm.
and they were tying it to a kind of, what Pope Gregory the 16th called latitudinarianism and indifferentism, basically mm-hmm. relativism. And so the Church, for good reason, I think, was wary of it. They had these famous kind of 19th century papal condemnations of it. But so many at the council worried that if now we're going to support religious freedom, are we just doing an about-face on our doctrine, or are we giving into that very relativism we worried about? But part of the beauty of Dignitatis Humanae is that its architects figured out a different way to endorse religious freedom that didn't fall into those errors, and that could be said to be in continuity with the dogmatic teaching of the Church, namely this teaching on the dignity of the person mm-hmm. as a being who searches for and finds fulfillment in religious truth, ultimately in the Catholic truth.
So it didn't relieve the individual of the moral obligation to pursue the true faith.
Yeah, that's very important. I mean, as Cardinal John Henry Newman, who was sort of one of the kind of founders in some sense of the document,
mm-hmm.
as he said, religion has rights because it has duties. And so it's the right to religious freedom is grounded in the duty of every person to seek the truth and to search for the truth about the things that matter most.
Hmm. The conference climaxed with it was the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and there was a papal mass at St. Peter's Basilica. Had that always been part of the plan?
Well, that was one of those providential things. We were very fortunate to have the wonderful, good offices of the Knights of Columbus coming into partnership with us through our Georgetown partners. And Carl Anderson was slated to speak for the conference at the last minute, and he couldn't make it because of a family illness. His address was delivered by one of his staff. And but then the Knights of Columbus also had this connection with the papal mass for the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe, which happened to be on the last day of the conference. And yeah. So, in fact, I remember looking back and seeing you right there, Al, and yeah. You seemed to be enjoying it quite a lot.
it was unexpected. A
beautiful mass.
It was. Yeah, it was remarkable.
I sat there and beheld the canopy of Bernini and just the splendor of it. It was quite something.
It looked to me as though the participants were very engaged through the whole conference, and I was looking at it as someone who was doing interviews with those in attendance and those who were presenting. As the organizer of it, were you impressed by the degree to which the participants remained engaged throughout the conference?
Yes, I was, and we were delighted by the attendance. First of all, I estimated about 300 mm-hmm. at the opening session. Then I would say about a consistent 150 to 250 yeah. through the rest of it. I didn't see a drop off though either. And so just the fact that people stayed for the whole thing
yeah.
and didn't find it more attractive to go down and get some gelato or something was a good sign. But we tried to provide lots of room for question and answer, and for, you know, we always had lines of people at the microphones that were longer than, you know, the time that we had for, mm-hmm. for the Q&A. So there was lots of engagement.
It was also a deeply ecumenical affair, which I think is important, because all the baptized are under a threat by this rise of global persecution. Did you find it easy to work with, say, Ken Starr at Baylor University, for one, and Ken Till at World Vision?
Oh, yeah. So both of those, as examples, are people who have been longstanding supporters of our work and mm-hmm. our project. Also had wonderful input from Bishop Angelos of the Coptic Church from Egypt.
Yes.
Who in recent months has been an eloquent voice on this issue and a public voice. We had Bishop Athenagoras of the Orthodox Church. We had Protestant leaders from the World Evangelical Forum.
Yeah.
An Anglican bishop and his wife from Nigeria. Again, they couldn't come at the last minute because they got their visa wasn't delivered. But they were slated in. We had their speech delivered.
Yeah.
And Cardinal Kirk Kulkas talked about the ecumenism of blood. And
indeed.
There's nothing like a persecution that can bring.
Dan, thank you so much. Dan Philpott, Under Caesar's Sword.